It's good to be with you this evening. Good to always be here in Church, Texas. Appreciate the introduction and the kind words. Sometimes I feel like I don't deserve any of those things, but I appreciate it anyway. But it is good to be here and good to be with the elders. Always good to be with Brother Stan and Sister Kathy, and they always do a great job of hosting me as I come here and put me up, and I appreciate it very much. And even Kathy cooks every now and then for me, so she's done it twice in 4 years. So I thought I'd throw that in there for Kathy. She wanted to hear that. But we do appreciate it very much. And I love the congregation here. You're a good group of people. And I know you love the Lord, and we appreciate that very much. And I pray great success for the lectureship as it continues on and all the good work that it'll do in the future, both now and present in the future also. But we're going to talk this evening about the Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their personal conduct in positions of authority. Something you and I need to realize is this. It takes a very unique person to handle authority. Not everyone is cut out to be in a position of authority. There are many men who want to be in a position of authority, many women who want to be in a position of authority, but not all of them are up for the task. And so when one puts himself in a position of authority or is elevated by his peers to be in a position of authority, it is a very unique position, and they need to take it very seriously because they hold in their hands the souls of others, lives of others, and things of such nature. And so they need to be very careful of it. But such was the character of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They possessed unique characters which help them to make wise decisions. And when one is going to be in a position of authority, they need to be able to make wise decisions. Because once again, not only do they hold people's lives in their hands, as these men did, but also, as you and I think about position of authority in the church, those who hold position of authority in the church, they hold the souls of men and women in the very hand that they rule over the people. And so one ought to be very cautious, one ought to be very careful in placing himself in a position of authority. As we set the stage, Babylon was taking control of Judah, and Judah had to surrender valuables to Babylon, and Judah also had to send their brightest and their best to Babylon. Among these, the brightest and best, we find Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Nebuchadnezzar, selected young men from different backgrounds according to verse 3. They were those from the king's palace, princes, and things of that nature. And he was very specific about the kind of young men that he wanted. And look with me at Daniel 1, verse 4, as we turn over there. Daniel chapter 1, verse 4, Daniel reads, children in whom were no blemish, well-favored, skilled in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had the ability to stand in the king's palace, in whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And so these people were a very select group. And these four Hebrew children, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they fit the bill for what the king wanted. And so they were selected, and there was training that went on according to verse 5. The king performed to them a daily portion of the king's meat and the wine which he drank, so nourished them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. And we'll come back to that thing about the king, about the meat and the drink. But this was done in order to train them that they might stand before the king, that he might find them ready to do the kind of work that he had in mind for them to do. God selected these four and blessed them. Look at verse 17. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge, skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. This is something God gave them, wasn't it? Nothing that Nebuchadnezzar did, but rather something that God had done for them, that God blessed them with the ability to be able to have these different talents and to be able to use them, of course, because realizing this, God is setting the stage for things of the future, isn't he? God knows what's going to take place. God sees all things, whether you and I see them or not, and God puts people in positions of authority that he might use them as he needs them as time goes on. And that's exactly what he's doing with Daniel and the three Hebrew children. He's placing them in positions that will help him to be able to bring his people back to where they want to come to. And not only that, to show favor even among these people who have them in captivity. After 3 years of preparation, the king is pleased with Daniel and also with the three Hebrew children. We find in verse 20 that says that all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And so he finds these four to be great, doesn't he? And he finds them in such a way that he elevates them above all others who are in his kingdom. And because of that, Daniel is given authority. Look in chapter 2, verse 48. Chapter 2, verse 48. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Of course, this was after, of course, that Daniel had interpreted to him the image, what it meant, the great image that came before the king. After that, Daniel interpreted that and told him what was going on. And because of that, Daniel was elevated to this great position of authority. But watch this here. Not only was Daniel elevated, but so was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Because in verse 49, then Daniel requested the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. And so these four were set in high positions in Babylon. And they were given great authority, as it were, to rule over different things of the king. Here you have it, these young Hebrew children who have gotten now favor with the king. They have been elevated to great high positions. And when you think about that, think for just a minute about what that might do to a young man. I mean, what it does to an old man, think about what it might do to a young man. That might go to their head, you think. They might begin to think, I'm somebody. Look who I am. I'm great in this kingdom. I've came out of Judah, and I've been placed in this position here, and I'm somebody special. But as you and I read on, we realize that was not the case, was it? They did not allow that thing to go to their head and to think somebody that they weren't. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are again promoted after they go through a trial in chapter 3. Look at verse 30. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Of course, this is after the fiery furnace, and they show their life and how they are standing firm for God. And we're going to come back to that in just a moment. But I want us to understand that throughout this book, they're being placed in high positions of authority. Constantly, over and over and over, they're being placed in these high positions. And likewise was Daniel in Daniel chapter 6. Here, look over in Daniel chapter 6, verse 1 through 3. After Daniel refuses to bow to the image and he is cast in the lion's den, you're called in chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. It says, and it pleased Darius to sit. Well, not this is before he's cast the lion's den, but it pleased Darius to sit over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts of them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the princes, the presidents, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to sit him over the whole realm. So Daniel was set up in a high position, wasn't he? And as I said, just think about it just for a minute. All these places that they're put in these high positions, what it could have done to a young man's mind. I know, as a young person, when you're given authority and different things, it goes to your head sometimes, doesn't it? And you get to thinking, you know, hey, I'm the boss. I can do what I want to do, you know. I've got power over these people, you know. But that's not how we are to think about authority, is it? Sometimes men are placed in positions of authority, even in the church, and they allow that authority to go to their head. We ought to be very, very careful about position of authority, because with position of authority come great responsibility. And we ought to recognize that we're put in a position of authority, whether it be an elder, or whether it be a preacher, or whether it be a Bible school teacher, or whatever that authority may be, we have great responsibility with that authority, and we need to take it very seriously, realizing the impact it can have on our lives as well as the lives of others. Well, the Hebrews' children, their faith in God, they refuse to compromise their faith in God. And really, that's what it comes down to, isn't it? When you think about the authority they had, being placed in these high positions, that could have affected their faith tremendously, don't you think? That really could have impacted their faith. But as you see, as we're going to develop this lesson on forward, you'll see that no matter what came upon them, even though they're in these high positions of authority, they never let it affect their faith at all. Today, we need to realize that today, don't we? We cannot allow anything to affect our faith. We must stand today in this present age with all these things going on around about us and never allow anything to affect our faith, regardless of what positions we may find ourselves within. No matter the consequences, they would not turn from their God. Isn't that great? Isn't that great to know that here's these young men, even as they're getting older and different ages, no matter where they're positioned at in places of power, they never allowed that to go to their head, and they never allowed that to cause them to compromise their belief and their love and their faith in God. Because of their faith in God, they were able to overcome whatever was laid upon them, regardless of how terrible it seemed, regardless of how difficult it may have looked like. They never allowed themselves to stray away from God. And we today need to do the same thing, don't we? The same type of faith today will carry us through if we allow ourselves to have that type of faith in God. To realize that no matter what happens, God is always going to be there for us, isn't He? God will never leave us, will He? I heard a preacher one time preach that when does God leave? And he kept going through the whole lesson talking about when God leaves, you know. And he asked me later, he was a young man, and he asked me later, he said, what do you think of my lesson, Brother Skaggs? And I said, well, you know, it's difficult to say because God never leaves us. I understood what he was trying to get at, but he was coming about it from a wrong angle. And I told him, I said, what happens is that God never leaves us. We leave God. And when we leave God, God's hands are tied to be able to help us until we come back to God. God is stationary. He always stays in the same place. It is you and I who move away from God. And we're the ones who need to be able to move back to God if God's going to be able to help us. And so you think about the children's faith, the Hebrew children's faith. Think about this. First, their faith was tested by the king's meat and drink. Go back to chapter 1, if you will. Chapter 1 and verse 8. And let's look at what the text says. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel realized that in taking the king's meat, he would cause himself to be defiled. There may be two reasons for this, as you think about it, and you may agree with this, you may not. But one, of course, is this. In Leviticus chapter 11, they were commanded, the children of Israel were commanded, not to eat things unclean. No doubt, Daniel and his three Hebrew children friends, they understood the law, didn't they? And they understood, according to Leviticus chapter 11, they were not to eat anything unclean. And no doubt, these things that the king would offer them would be things that would be unclean. They might be things offered to idols. That's been mentioned. That's a possibility. But certainly there would have been things that were being unclean. I think there's another reason too. And this is a reason you might think about. I think they understood that this would cause them to be obligated to Nebuchadnezzar. Think about it now for a moment. They're being offered the king's meat. They're being offered the king's wine. That's a precious thing to the king, isn't it? Not everyone gets that. But they're being offered these things. And I believe that Daniel and his three companions, they understood the principle that if you take these things, you're going to be obligated to the king. I need a wider pulpit, you all. I can't find my place to put my Bible at you. But you know, the Bible is clear about our attitudes towards defilements, isn't it? Look, if you will, at 2 Corinthians real quick with me. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14 through 17. I know y'all know this, but let's turn over there real quick. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 14 through 17. Paul writes this: "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Baal? Or what part hath he that believeth in infidel? What agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore," he says, "come out from among them, and be you separate, saith the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." James said it something like this in James chapter 1, verse 27. "Pure religion and undefiled before God is to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and what? Keep thyself unspotted from the world." We have an obligation, don't we? To keep ourselves pure from the world. To keep ourselves from being defiled with things of the world. And no doubt they understood this. Many people's attitude is simply this: let's go along to get along, right? Let's just go along to get along with the world, and let's not worry about the consequences or things of that nature. But that wasn't Daniel's idea, was it? Not Daniel's idea at all. Realize this. There's an old saying is this: nothing in life is free. Generally speaking, that is true, isn't it? Nothing in life is free, generally. Understand this: somewhere down the road, payment will need to be made. When you begin to think about it, when you take something and you're thinking you're getting it for free, most times there are strings attached to it somewhere, isn't there? And somewhere down the road, you're going to have to realize that you're going to have to make payment back. And listen, sometimes that payment may be more than you bargained for. Sometimes it may be more than you bargained for. So be careful about taking things for free. Moses understood this principle, didn't he? In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 through 26, when Moses talked about, when the Hebrew writer wrote about Moses and the fact that he was in Pharaoh's house, he refused to be in Pharaoh's house and partake of the king's things, realizing that he would rather be serving God than serving Pharaoh, right? And he refused those things to enjoy the pleasures of sin, but for a season. Realizing this, when you enjoy the pleasures of sin, they may be for a season, they may be for a little while, they may be pleasurable, and they are. Somewhere down the line, you're going to pay for those, aren't you? Payment must be made somewhere down the line. And so it was that they understood this concept. So instead of eating the king's food, Daniel's three companions, they refused to eat it and wanted only pulse and water, according to chapter 1, verse 12. And at the end of the 10 days, they had bargained with him that if he'll let them do this, at the end of 10 days, they would fare better. And of course it was at the end of 10 days, Daniel's companions fared better than those who partook of the king's portion. Showing this here that God was with him, wasn't he? Once again, showing them that if they stayed with God, God would bless them, regardless of what others may think. And so no matter what position of authority you may have, do not think that positions of authority are gained in this sense here. If we allow it to go to our head, it'll cause us to compromise our faith in God. And so we must not ever allow this position to go to our head. And I want to just stop here and back up just a minute. Something we talked about earlier about those who put themselves in positions or those who eventually gain positions. There's nothing wrong with authority, okay? Matter of fact, God has set the Bible up to be where Christ has authority, has all authority, and Christ gave his apostles authority. They wrote down the scriptures for us. And in writing the scriptures, we're going to come to understand that we are to have elders in the church. And those elders have authority, don't they? But listen, friends, it's great to desire the office of an elder. There is not a greater office in all the land than the office of an elder. But one gets in that position, one must exercise caution and care and great concern. First off, to himself. You realize that? He must first look to himself. One of the fundamental principles throughout the New Testament, and for that matter throughout the Bible, is there always must be self-examination. Elders need to examine themselves too, always. But they also need this here. They need to realize this, that they're placed over men and women, and they're guiding them to heaven. That's their purpose, isn't it? To help guide them to heaven. Therefore, they need to exercise caution and care, realizing the great responsibility they have, and never take it for granted. They need to be a man like Daniel, who was a man of piety, to realize he needed to be a humble person, to understand that he needed to rely upon God in all things. Daniel set his mind to understand and live by spiritual and divine things. He understood that he needed to rely upon God in all things, not just some things, but in all things. And because of that reason, Daniel was a great man. Daniel understood the words of the wise man, Ecclesiastes chapter 21, verse 1, "Remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them." Daniel was a young man when he came into captivity. And even in that young age, he was placed in great positions of authority. But even at a young age, he realized how important it was even then to remember who God was and always keep him in mind. You know, God will always bless those who seek after him. But the thing you and I got to do is we've got to seek after God, right? We've got to seek after God. The Hebrews children of faith in God again. On the second point, is this here? Their faith was shown once again when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow before the golden image and worship it in chapter 3, in verse 12. Notice what it says. Chapter 3, verse 12. "There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. They refused, didn't they? And because of that, the king, he was full of rage and gives them a second chance to redeem themselves. You know, tells them, listen, you know, I'm going to give you all a second chance because I know that no one can be that foolish not to bow down and worship me when you know the consequences of what's going to happen. But notice their answer in chapter 3, verse 16 through 18. "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter." That is to say, listen, it doesn't matter. Here's our answer. We don't have to sit and think about this. Our answer has already been made up for us before you ever asked the question. That is, we already know what we're going to answer you, because our faith is in the God of heaven, not in your gods, not in you. It goes on to say here in verse 17, "If it be so, our God whom you serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king." But now listen to verse 18. "But if not," he says, they say, listen, we know that our God can deliver us, right? We have enough faith in our God to know that he can deliver us. But it may very well be that God says no this time. But he says, listen, "if not, be it known to thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which I have set up." We know who our God is, don't we? And even if our God decides that this is our time to leave this world, we're still not going to serve your gods. We're still not going to bow down for your image. Why? Because your gods are nothing. Your image is nothing. It can do nothing for us. But our God, He's the God of heaven. He's the God of the universe. He's the God that rules over the affairs of mankind. Why would we give up our faith in Him regardless of what may happen to us on this world? And so it was, they did not give up their faith, did they? Because of their great faith in God, God was glorified among the people and before Nebuchadnezzar, you recall. And the king made a great decree in Daniel chapter 3, verse 28 and 29, where he says, "Then Daniel spake," or Nebuchadnezzar spake, "and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trust in him, and have charged the king's words, and yielded," or changed the king's words, "and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore," he says, "I make a decree that every people, nation, language, which speak anything amiss against God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort." Well, that's a pretty broad statement for a king who's a heathen king, right? But yet he understood what took place, didn't he? He understood their great faith. You know, when you have that kind of faith, people will see that kind of faith, won't they? I believe today that we need that kind of faith today, that people might see that kind of faith in our lives as well. That we might be able to, people might be able to recognize who we are, that we are truly God's children. Third, their faith is shown when Daniel refused to stop praying as he had always prayed. I think it's probably one of the things that probably relate to us as much as anything. Because oftentimes we are put in positions where we're called to compromise of some nature of this nature. Daniel was well thought of by Darius and was appointed over his entire kingdom in Daniel chapter 6 and verse 1, as we read earlier. Because of that, men who were evil, presidents and princes, they did not like this. And they weren't happy with it at all. And because of that, in Daniel chapter 6, verse 4, it says, "Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was any error or fault found in him." Wasn't that something to say for a man? That they looked at Daniel and they looked and looked and looked and looked and looked, trying to find fault with him, and couldn't find any fault with him at all. What a great thing to say about a man. We can find no fault with this man. But they come up with a plan against Daniel, didn't they? You see, they weren't happy that Daniel was in that position, and they were going to find fault with him regardless what. That is, even if they had to manufacture something, they were going to find something wrong with him because they did not like him being in that position. Doesn't that tell you something about people's jealousy? People become jealous of those in high positions, don't they? That's something else that people have to fight when they're in high positions, are those who become jealous of them, you know, regardless of what position you may be in. I would dare say that there are those who are jealous of, and I'm just looking here at BJ back here, not to point him out, but BJ was pointed as the director of the Memphis School of Preaching, and no doubt there was some thought, well, who is he to be put in that position? I thought, I'm glad he is. He's the right man. But there are those in the brotherhood even who would think, well, who is he to be put in that position, you know? Or even when I became the editor of the Gospel Journal, I'm sure, though no one voiced it to me, I'm sure some said, well, who is he to be put in that position? I said that to myself, you know. But Brother Cates assured me that I was the right man. He may still be wrong. Time will tell. But what happens sometimes is when men get put in great positions, there are those around about them who become jealous of them. And those who are put in those positions need to be careful not to think too much about that. Because it happens to great, great men of ages gone by, and it will happen to men even today. But these, they come up with a plan, didn't they? Look at Daniel chapter 6, verse 7 through 9. All the presidents, now read that. All the presidents of the kingdom and the governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save thee, O king, he shall be cast in the den of lions. Oh, now, king, establish the decree and sign the writing that it be not charged according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which alter not. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. So here they've come up with a plan, haven't they? We will find fault. They knew Daniel, didn't they? You see, these people, they had studied Daniel. They had studied him over and over and over. They knew what he would do. And sure enough, look what Daniel does. Chapter 6, verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Daniel did not change the way he did things just because they were watching. Daniel knew they were watching, don't you think? Because the text says that as soon as the decree was signed, he waited for it to be signed. He knew what they were up to. He knew that they were trying to entrap him. But he also knew this, that he put his faith in God and not in men. And even though he was in a great position of power, great position of authority, he did not let that position deter him one iota. He still went and bowed down three times a day, as it were, he had always done, and continued to do that, knowing that they were laying in wait for him. And yet he did not deter. I think sometimes people today will say, well, you know what? If I do it this way, someone's going to catch me, but if I go and do it a different way, I can get by with it. Listen, friends, it doesn't matter. If we're going to serve God, we need to serve him before all mankind, do we not? We ought not to ever hide what we're going to do. Daniel put his faith in God, and that is what he always has done, and what you and I must do as well. And because of that, of course, Daniel was thrown in the lion's den, as you realize, in chapter 6, verse 16. But Darius came the next morning, chapter 6, verse 20 and 22, realizing that God had delivered Daniel from the lion's den. And all those presidents and all those other men, their wives and all their children, guess what happened to them? They were thrown in the lion's den, and they were killed, weren't they? God delivered Daniel from the lion's den. The same God that's ever delivered Daniel from the lion's den will also deliver us from the lion's den. We need to realize that our faith needs to be the kind of faith that these children had. To realize that we can have that kind of faith. We can stand firm in the midst of all the ungodly things that are going on in our world today. Daniel did. The three Hebrew children did too. And you and I can do likewise. May God help us to be able to do that in this present day. Thank you.